Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Carl Felt is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Boise. Speak Boise is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard. You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios, Speak Boise, and at their website, speakstudios.com. Speak Studios, speak and be heard.
This podcast is also brought to you by Instant Imprints. Promote better with Instant Imprints. Instant Imprints are Boise's visual communications experts and your place for everything you need to promote your business, club, school, or group. As a locally owned business, Instant Prints specializes in making your organization more visible with custom branded apparel, embroidery, promotional items, print services, and a wide format printing for signs, as well as banners and vehicle graphics. Want better ways to get noticed? Visit Instant Prints at instantprints.com/Boise or call 200-IMPRINTS, that's 208-467-7468. Welcome back to Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Carl Felt. I am so excited about the show that we have ahead of us. We have some phenomenal information that could save lives. I am Dr. Michael Carl Felt, and with me I have my co-host,
Tanya Hobo.
You're going to need to tune in to what's going on today. The information is jam-packed, so don't step away.
So excited. Let's go ahead and get this started. Well, welcome, Candy. We are so excited to have you here today. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm excited to hear your story. See what's been going on. You look alive and well and look full of vitality. So I'm curious where what all happened. Yeah, where it all started.
I've been in remission for 8 years now. So, it's been a long journey, but I'm feeling good.
8 years. I love hearing that.
Yeah, that is. And you haven't had any relapse or any, you just felt good throughout the whole time.
Well, I think when you finish treating Lyme, I think you enter a new phase of rebuilding your body. And, a lot of things have been broken for so long. So I think it took me a good 3-4 years before I feel like I hit my stride, where I felt like maybe my metabolism was coming back online and, I could tolerate things better, So, sometimes I still struggle with mono that comes and goes and some adrenal issues, but I just listen to my body and just, make sure I'm keeping my diet clean, staying up on supplements. When you're after Lyme, your care is much different in some ways. You sometimes you can be a little bit more fragile and you just got to be careful and take care of yourself.
Yeah. And that is the key. I mean, that people need to recognize there are different faces to it. One face is where you have to kind of go after the pathogens in themselves, but then at the same time, you got to make sure you're able to deal the assault that you're doing on the pathogens. And then there's a phase of rebuilding. I mean, it's like, I always liken things kind of like the house is on fire, So first you got to stop the fire. But then after that, you got to rebuild it. And that's exactly post-Lyme.
And then I think there's an after fact after that too, because I think our life is never the same after Lyme. Doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. It's just different. We adapt to a new life, I think, after Lyme disease, because we know the changes that we've, generated throughout our illness, and we know that we have to stay strict with a lot of those, because the horror and the nightmare that so many of us lived during that journey, we never want to go back to. So we'll do what we need to do to stay healthy. So there's so many phases along the journey as well.
So I think in our situation too, all my kids were born with Lyme. My husband has had Lyme, so my aftercare, even after I treated Lyme, was treating my children. So, the stress load that comes with chronic illness on a family scale. I mean, I think maybe in some situations, some people would have been like, oh, and maybe they take off and get their whole life back. But I kind of find that managing stress is huge for just making sure that I stay in remission, you know?
And I'm curious, because a lot of people may not think of that, yes, I have Lyme, and now, you know, I need to look at my children. Do they have mm-hmm. Lyme? I mean, they may never have been bitten by tick, but you gave birth to them, and a lot mm-hmm. of these pathogens pass through the placenta. So how did you figure that they had Lyme?
You know, it's kind of funny because my husband was first diagnosed. I wasn't even diagnosed till after my third child was born, and my great decline happened after that. And it wasn't until I was diagnosed where all of a sudden all the pieces started connecting on the problems that my children had. And all of a sudden it was like, once I got my diagnosis, it was like, the doctor was like, we need to treat your children. We'll treat all three of them. We'll just do it all right now. And because, you know, Lyme in children can present a little differently than in adults. And so it was kind of an interesting journey to just all of a sudden do it all at once.
So what were the cues, you know, for you and your children?
You know, the cues for me, it was interesting. I was always really healthy before I met my husband, before we had kids. But after my third child, you know, like I even the summer before I'd had my last child, I had just done a triathlon sprint. I would ref basketball. I was just so, I loved being active, loved being outside. You know, we would go camping. And after my third child, everyone jokes like, oh, it's so hard and your body breaks. And I kind of assumed it was that about a month after, my son was born. I just kind of noticed I was exhausted. I was putting on a little bit of weight and I was depressed. And I just thought, well, this is typical baby blues. Like, you know, this just happens after you give birth. And by the second month, I had noticed that I had put on a little bit more weight and the fatigue was a little bit more crushing. So, you know, being athletic, I was like, okay, well, you slash your calories and you start moving, right? And so I had cut down to about 1200 calories and was trying to work out. And I'm, you know, 5'9", very strong muscular build. So 1200 was, the fact that I had gotten down to 1200 was a little ridiculous. And I was putting on about 2 pounds a week.
Even with that. And it was,
yeah, it just baffled me. And then by the time I had hit 6 months postpartum, I had gained 55 pounds and I had started having heart palpitations. I had a cardiologist diagnose me with PVCs, which are premature ventricular compressions, which is when your heart adds extra beats. So my heart wasn't beating efficiently and I started having the muscle and coordination issues. And by the time I hit 11 months postpartum, almost a year, I had a cascade of neurological symptoms. I was at that point mostly bedridden or lying on a couch, and I have these three kids under about 7, and my hormone levels were off, like my thyroid levels were inverted. I would have numbness and tingling throughout my body. I had weird joint things. You know, I never had typical swelling like some people get when they have joint issues with Lyme, but I found that they weren't load-bearing. Like I couldn't stand on my, you know, I'd have an ankle that would go out or my wrist wouldn't work or, and then I would just get this great crushing weight on my body. I almost felt like gravity was picking on me and just pushing me down. And I would just succumb to this, you know, just this heavy lead weight feeling. I was having vision disturbances. I was trying to describe it to my husband one time. It's like, you know, those old TVs where you didn't get the channel right and you would get this black and white static. My eyes would just start seeing static. And, but I would probably say the most disturbing was, of course, probably for everyone, the nerve pain. You know, you just feel like you're being electrocuted and you can't figure out how to turn it off. And it was so painful. And then the memory issues were scary. I would say probably the worst moment I had, and I can't remember if it was before or after I was diagnosed, whether I was in treatment or not, but I woke up in the middle of the night and I looked over at my husband and I did not recognize him. And I looked around the room and thought, where am I? And then lastly, I couldn't remember my own name. I couldn't remember who I was. And it just was terrifying. You know, sometimes I couldn't remember my children's names. I mean, there was a lot of, the decline was so quick, you know, and people that knew me just didn't understand how this third baby had changed me, you know. And I finally had been going to doctors, and one doctor had diagnosed me with acute MS. And he said, your progression is so rapid. He even said, I give it 2 years. He said, it's not slowing down. And I just had kind of, I had not even considered Lyme, even though my husband had been diagnosed with Lyme before. He had never had any neurological symptoms. I went neurological right off the bat. And so I, you know, had a lot of downtime, of course. And I came across on Netflix that Under Our Skin documentary. And I was like, oh, my husband had that. I'll, you know, click and watch it. And they talk about the possibility of sexual transmission and congenital transmission and MS and all these things. And my brain starts going. So I book an appointment with our previous doctor that had treated my husband. And I walked in the door and I said, I just got diagnosed with acute MS. And she just looked at me and shook her head. And she goes, no, your Lyme treatments start today. Like, she just knew there was no chance. She's like, this is way too high of a probability. She goes, we start now.
So you think it was through sexual transmission that you got it?
I do believe it was. I know that's a controversial topic. And I know a lot of people don't believe that can happen, but my husband was actually sick before we got married. We didn't know it was Lyme. We just thought it was GI and sinuses and headaches and all these different things. And I, you know, even after we got married, I never had any symptoms of it until after my third child, yet all three of my children, you know, of course, you know, had Lyme as well. And we treated them. I mean, we have a daughter right now that's 16 that's relapsed, and we just did a blood test for her to confirm Lyme. And she has 7 strains of Lyme in her blood, 7. And my husband was infected in South America, if we trace it back, you know, so I don't know if there's, you know, particular strains there that are, you know, just different. But we just think, well, how's it possible that my firstborn child would have this? But, you know, so we think it really was sexual transmission.
And what kind of labs did you run to see all those 7 strains? I mean, was it just a plain Western blot, or what did you do?
No, for my daughter recently, when we tested her, we went through Vibrant Wellness and we did their full tick-borne panel. She also has, you know, Babesia, 2 Bartonellas, toxoplasmosis, parvo, you know, some of those things. So when my husband and I were diagnosed, we did not have a lot of money, and our insurance, we had kept maxing out our insurance and on his other health stuff. So by the time we had kind of found a natural doctor that knew what this was, and they're like, well, would you like us to run blood tests? And we were like, we have no money. And so they said, well, we can presumptively treat you. We can do a clinical diagnosis. We believe it's Lyme for your husband. And they just went forward and they're like, let's see how he reacts to treatment. So it's funny because it's not until just 3 months ago when my daughter was blood tested that I guess you could say it confirmed that what we've been dealing with is Lyme.
That's crazy. So I can't imagine you having Lyme and then having to treat your whole family at the same time. I don't even know how to ask the question because I can't even imagine what that was like.
I mean, because then you have nobody that's functional.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely not.
And so you have a group of everyone, you know, dealing with ailments, and now you're trying to keep that all together. And obviously, as a mother, you tend to be the one that still have to kind of hold on to all the strings And here you're dealing, you're laying in bed and can't even remember your own name.
I was going to say, yeah, and nobody knows anybody's name. Do we even belong in this house together?
Hey, you, get off the couch. Stop jumping on the, you know, yeah, it's kind of funny. You know, it really was a really hard time. My husband had just started a master's program as well. He was working full time and it started a 20 plus hour a week master's program. And yeah, because, you know, when you start Lyme treatments, you're addressing food and you've got a schedule of supplements and treatments. I had some really good friends that stepped in and were so helpful. There were some mornings where I would wake up and my body was just numb and I couldn't move. And I always had my phone kind of like next to my bed and I had my next door neighbor on speed dial. And I just said, I hear my youngest, he woke up, he was, you know, about one. I said, he's crying. He woke up and I can't get him. And so she knew my garage code and she would come and get him. And she would pick up my kids from school sometimes until I could move again, you know, because some of these things would come and go. You know, it wasn't that I always couldn't remember my name, right? Or, you know, some of these things. And sometimes we were functional or not, but I had people, I had some family, but they were much further away. So if you had a flare and then you can't do anything and you've got these young children, I mean, it's a safety issue. So I had a couple really good stable people that I invited into my home. And they were so good.
That's so incredible. Good. Yeah. Because it's, you know, I know you and I have talked a few times and it's hard to explain because one day you can't get out of bed and you need that help, but yet tomorrow you can get out of bed just fine. So,
yes,
you know, yes. Even though it is hard to hear your 1-year-old crying and you can't help them, but maybe knowing that, you know, tomorrow could be a better day and you can help them. But I'm so, so glad to hear that you had, you know, a few cheerleaders around you that were supporting you through that, because Lyme is such a lonely and isolating disease as it is. And then to literally not have anybody helping you when you're fighting the battle for your whole entire family. So I'm glad to hear that you had that help.
Yeah, thank you. And my husband was so good. Even though he was burned out in all of his avenues, he would come home and help with the bulk cooking, or, you know, he was just so good and understanding. And it's funny because even though he never had neurological symptoms, I mean, even he was like, what is this? Like when I was first in decline, he's like, are you just being lazy? You know, and he didn't really mean it like in an insulting way, but he was just like, I know you and this isn't you. Like what's happening? Like, you're the one that wants to get up and go. And, you know, so even though he didn't quite understand the neurological side of it all, he was so helpful. You know, those times where he was home, he would just jump in and, you know, did whatever needed to be done. So.
And what kind of symptoms did he have from the Lyme? I mean, how did it present in him?
Yeah, so we think he picked it up in Brazil from a flea bite. He had a stray dog jump on him, and he did have a type of bullseye rash. They diagnosed it as ringworm. So they gave him some antifungals or something on his skin and sent him off. And he started very quickly with chronic headaches and sinus infections that wouldn't go away until he was diagnosed with Lyme. I think he had a sinus infection for 10 years. And then a host of intestinal issues. We would joke that he was incompatible with food and those kind of progressively, you know, went along. But because of all the sinus issues, he was constantly being put on the antibiotics. And I think it prevented it from truly going full blown neurological. So by the time we got to treatment, this clinic wasn't, they're not a huge fan of antibiotic treatment anyway, the place we went, but they were like, this isn't even an option for you. You've maxed out on every antibiotic. And they're like, we will do other things. So they started more on like, lots of parasites, gut issues, and mold was where we started with him.
And so what did the treatment look like? I mean, so you said parasite, mold. I mean, how did they address that?
Yeah, how they addressed it was primarily through homeopathics. We would do Banderol and Cemento, Desbios series, they did a lot of nutritional supplements for adrenals and, you know, rebuilding gut, and lots of different supplements and homeopathics. And then the other treatments that they did were IV ozone therapy through the blood. And then we would do ion foot baths to pull out whatever debris and open up detox pathways, and just a lot of lymphatic drainage. And you kind of just recycle, you know, rinse and repeat. And, you know, I mean, the diet thing was huge, you know, reducing grains, simple carbs, fruits, you know, we cut out a lot of things. Nightshades were a huge trigger for my husband in particular. You know, it's funny, I never actually had any intestinal issues, you know, like my husband did, but they still address the same things, you know, parasites. I mean, I had toxoplasmosis, and, you know, in my brain. So they kind of would go through and they would do parasites, mold, and, you know, biofilm, removing the biofilm from the bacteria. And then, you know, it's pretty amazing because I was so like incapacitated most of the time. Within 6 weeks of me starting treatments, about the 6 week mark of the ozone and all this stuff, I had gained about 80% of my mobility back. I was able to not be on the couch all the time. Now I still had, you know, nerves firing and, you know, things going crazy, but I was able to be more mobile and take care of my kids better. And then when things would flare, you know, we would call in the neighbors or, you know, whatever we needed to do. But I was shocked at how quickly my body responded, and his as well. When he had started treatments, his sinus infection was gone within the first month, and I was blown away because he had had that thing for like 10 years. Yeah. And of course it was a mold infection, right? Not a true sinus infection. It was mold. And when we had first gone to this natural clinic, my background is very sciencey medical. And when we walked in, I kind of had a bad attitude and I was like, this is so bogus. I can't believe we're here. Like, we obviously have exhausted all of our resources if we're here. And I feel so much shame even having felt that, because I'm a true convert, right? Like, you know, I feel so differently now because we finally found relief, you know, for my husband for the first time in almost 10 years, you know. And then when I had my bout, I knew exactly, like, by the time it kind of registered in my mind, oh, I think this could be Lyme, I didn't even try to go anywhere else.
No.
I knew we wanted to go natural.
And how often did you do, like, the UBI, the ultraviolet blood irradiation and the ozone?
Good question. I would do one every 5 days for about 2 months. So you would do between 6 and 8. And then I would kind of hit this part of my treatment where things would kind of calm down. And then they were like, well, let's stop treating. Let's have you just do some maintenance stuff. So then I would go 4 months of just, you know, maintenance herbs and stuff. And then things would flare again. So then I would do another 2 months of more intensive, intentional therapies. And then I had another 4 months where I just kind of did in between, and then another 2 month bout. So I would say probably about a year and a half total, just kind of on and off going in for what I needed for ozone and foot baths. I was always good about staying on top of, but and then some of the supplements, you know, they would make me be on for when we were intentionally trying to treat and kill Lyme or weaken biofilms. But then once my body kind of stopped responding, they would be like, well, come back when it rears its ugly head again and do some of these maintenance things. So after a year and a half, I would probably say the biggest thing that made that last push really effective is I got really serious about my diet. I think the hardest thing is kind of, you know, giving up some of the treats that you just occasionally want to have. And, you know, grains are just so easy. You know, when you're not feeling well, there's foods that are so easy and you're like, you know, shouldn't touch them. You know, they're so taboo if you have Lyme. But that last push, I just finally, for I think it was 2 months, went super clean. And we hit the treatments really hard. And it's funny because I was the sickest I ever was right before that last push. The worst symptoms I had ever had, I just, that last relapse was so bad, and I just got really desperate and cut everything out and, you know, did even more to follow everything to a T, and then it's never come back since.
Wow. That's incredible. Tell us a little bit about when you changed the whole diet, because I think that it's so important, and I don't think a lot of people realize how important food is to your body. You know, I remember growing up, and I'm even guilty myself. I would tell my 2-3-year-old little niece, I'm like, you're going to turn into a chicken nugget, because that's all she ever wanted to eat. But you are kind of what you eat. We talked a little bit about your children when you cut out certain foods and how quickly things changed for them. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So, you know, I don't know if just stomach issues is a genetic weakness for my husband and my kids, but stomach issues, we've never been able to avoid the food issue in our house. You know, it's always been an issue from when they were little. And I remember our natural doctor had said, you really need to cut the food dyes and preservatives out of your kids' diets. I had kids with, oh gosh, their emotions were just erratic and their anger outbursts were intense. And I was, you know, still in my skeptical phase. I'm like, oh, that is a load of garbage. Like, there's no way that that will make a difference. Well, finally, you know, we pulled the plug on food dyes and preservatives, which is funny because when you pull those, you know, you cut out a lot of garbage and a lot of processed stuff. You cut out a lot of corn naturally and things like that. And my middle child in particular, that could be incredibly explosive. After 3 days off of food dyes and preservatives, you know, we'd had a little spat. I told him he had to go and time out in his room and calm down and think about his emotions. And he kind of just said, fine. And he just went to the room and sat on the bed. And he wasn't throwing things. He wasn't screaming. He wasn't throwing a fit. He was just reasonable, you know, as much as a four-year-old can be reasoned with. But I was shocked at how it didn't, how he all of a sudden had more mental faculties than he had had before. And my daughter, my oldest, she had never really had anger issues with dyes. The biggest thing I saw with her is when we pulled those out, that she could follow instructions, multi-step instructions, which before then was so difficult. You would say, Josie, put on your shoes and get your coat and we're leaving. And she would say, okay, Mom. And then she would turn the wrong way. And I'm just like, ah, you know, she's not listening. But she could not process. Now, they also had underlying Lyme and all these things. But when we pulled that out, she could go and put her shoes on. And I remember thinking, whoa, this is different. And, you know, I could tell her something and she remembered an hour later. So for her, it was definitely causing some cognitive function issues, which we always thought she was a little on the slow side, just, you know, very sweet and a little slow to respond. But once we took those out, I mean, she was sharp as a tack. We just had no idea, you know, so her school performance got better. You know, like I said, my second child was much more manageable. He's a very passionate person and that's never changed, but now he has the ability to understand his emotions a little bit more and he had more control. So I was surprised that even something as simple as food dyes and preservatives and the inflammation that it must have been causing in their bodies, that even just after a few days, you know, we just saw a remarkable difference there.
That's crazy because, you know, you hear so many people talk about their children have ADHD. You know, I can't tell them three different tasks to do because it's too much for them to remember. And it just makes you think that it's got to be these foods maybe, you know, maybe not in all cases, but it's so scary. I know the food coloring and the food dyes are not a good thing. And we think that we're eating healthy, but healthy and clean is two totally different things. So,
and yes. like you're saying is that people don't realize that you can eat something that is inflammatory and that inflammatory signal can last for a couple of weeks, which means that if you, and it depends on how sensitive your system is. So I liken it to like a, you know, flipping a light switch, you know, flipping on the inflammation. So sometimes in some people, you don't need a lot of force to flip that switch. It can be just the minutest, you know, the tiniest little thing. And I flip that switch on, and that switch is on for a couple of weeks. And then it's really hard to then pinpoint and see, because you don't see an immediate cause and effect. You can eat something, and maybe 3 days later, you're feeling it, or maybe a week later. And so it's hard then to correlate exactly with what food. So then to do what you were doing, to really kind of clean everything up and then work from that baseline. And then you can then kind of see how the body's responding. And then it's much easier to then to kind of read your body and how it's responding.
Yes. And I would say the other inflammatory trigger foods, and you're right, like, you know, we started seeing results after 3 days, but it may be months before you see that having come out. And the other foods that we had to change for sure was gluten. That one had to go real quick. Corn, soy, sugar, of course.
Darn it.
I would probably, you know, those, when we pulled those out, you know, we just saw really great improvements in our ability to heal, you know.
And it functions like a bucket effect, you know, meaning that, you know, if you can get rid of some of these bigger offenders, and that will then lower the load, and you kind of take offender by offender until all of a sudden the bucket is not flowing over anymore and you're not symptomatic. Yeah, so yeah, to kind of clean it up like you're doing, yeah, soy, corn, I mean, heavily GMO, and sugar, very inflammatory. So yeah, that's awesome.
And like you said, it's one of the hardest things to do. It really is. I mean, battling Lyme in itself is hard, but to change your whole entire way of eating that you've known, and especially for children, you know, because it's hard enough to get them to eat good stuff, let alone to take away all their treats. But it's, I remember you saying that, you know, that was the hardest part for you, was changing the whole diet and the food thing. If we could just have our own personal chef in that department so that we could focus on, you know, getting better. But the food part is a lot of getting better.
So how
it is, I think it's something that it's, people are very resistant to want to change, you know, especially since they have their comfort foods and their certain items. And I think some of our American culture is, even when you go into natural treatments, it's like, give me my magic pill, or give me my natural, you know, give me the drops I need, or give me the supplements I need, but I won't change my diet. And you know, maybe some people get better without changing their diet. Maybe some people do, but I think we really underestimate, you know, what we can truly do for ourselves when we, you know, eliminate some of these things. And it takes a lot of bravery and courage to do so. And I never fault anyone that hasn't been able to do it. I'm like, oh, you know, it's all good. Just keep going. Just do the best you can, you know. But it is, I think we want a more simple answer, because food takes so much energy, it takes so much time and attention and money, right? You know, when you're buying more natural things, it adds to the cost. And if your kids aren't going to eat it, then why buy it? I mean, it's a hard threshold to cross.
And then when you're exhausted, not feeling well, then obviously you want to reach for something that's simple and quick. And and obviously simple and quick is not really that healthy. So then you have to get over that threshold of, now I have to put in even more effort. I don't feel good. And I have to put in more effort to what I'm eating.
Yes, absolutely.
And so with your children, I mean, obviously that's one of the biggest struggles for any parent. So what were some of your tricks to get them to eat healthy?
Oh, man, this is a good question. I don't know if I'm the right person to ask on this. My husband says I'm too strict, because I'm one of those people that will not make separate meals. So, you know, if you want something else, you eat 3 bites of what's on your plate of everything, and then I'm happy to give you a piece of fruit or something else. But you don't get this bowl of cereal. I mean, we don't really do cereal, but you know what I mean? Like, I took the 3 bites and now I get what I want. It's like, well, if, you know, what we say, if you don't eat what's on your plate, you have to take 3 bites of that first. And then you can have a fruit or another veggie out of the fridge. And if you're still hungry, go back to your plate. Because we didn't have energy for the picky, and believe me, we had the outbursts, we had the tantrums. I don't want to eat this soup again. I mean, you know, the crying, but you know, survival mechanisms are really strong. And when your kids get hungry, I promise you, they will eat, and they will eat the weird looking thing that has no dyes and doesn't look pretty. They will eat it. At some point they will. And you just pretend it's normal. And if they choose not to eat it, then they choose not to eat it. And you just let them, you know, let them go. So, you know, we try not to make it a battle. When they made it a battle, we just said, well, it's there for you. If you want to eat it, great. And they figure it out pretty quickly. You know, if you engage in the battle, the kids will manipulate and cry. You just got to shut that down and be like, the rule is you have to take at least 3 bites and then you can have a piece of fruit or whatever. But you always come back to this meal because I don't have energy to make anything else. I'm not making you a sandwich and I'm not making you a favorite food. So I was really strict on that. So not the most loving approach, but it was a survival approach and it worked.
And I actually think that's probably the best ways of doing it. Because like you're saying, if you get sucked into their whole emotional manipulating roller coaster, then mm-hmm. I mean that battle is a hard one to win. So, and like you're saying, I mean, people are, oh, they're gonna starve and they're gonna just fade away. I mean, if they are hungry, they're gonna eat something.
Yes, they will. Yes, they will. You know, and here's the thing: you can't outlast a 4-year-old throwing a tantrum. You just can't. Like, you just don't even try.
You know, and it's funny because I bet if you didn't have Lyme and you weren't sick, it would have been so much easier just to give into it. But because Absolutely. You were sick, you knew that you couldn't make another meal. You couldn't give into it. You did not mm-hmm. have that energy. Or we talked about the spoon theory. You didn't have those extra spoons to make, you know, to cater to them. So kind of in a good way, it was good that you all went through the journey at the same time if you all were going to have it anyways, you know. So, and it does make it easier when everybody is eating the same thing versus you get to have this, but I don't. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that causes way too many fights. Right. Yeah.
Well, Is there any other kind of tip, like a golden tip that you feel? I mean, people that just been newly diagnosed or kind of wondering whether they are dealing with Lyme. I mean, is there like, you know, this golden nugget I wish I would have known, or this is something that I've learned through my journey that I wish I would have known?
Well, here's something I discovered through the journey. And I think particularly when you deal with neurological Lyme and so much gets taken away from you, you know, like I love playing piano and sewing and a lot of things that require mobility and coordination. It was so easy for me to quickly fall into a place of I've lost everything. I have no way to contribute. Everything is going wrong. But one thing that I kind of figured out pretty quickly is I needed to focus on the things that I could do. Because even though you are sick as a dog, you do have some moments where your body mounts maybe a little bit of energy or a little bit of stamina. And with my husband being gone in school and I'm dealing with kids, you know, if I had actually honed in a lot of my sewing skills, I figured if I can sit up and if I can move my hands enough, then I can work on this. So I picked sewing. And it's funny because the years of being sick with Lyme, I actually developed enough skills to become a professional seamstress. Oh. And I would have never thought that could have come out of my sickest time. I worked a lot on lyric writing. When I had energy to play the piano, I kind of worked on things. And of course, progression for how fast I wanted things to go, it was a little bit slow, but the sum total of a lot of small actions do add up. And if you can't change, you know, if you're doing the best you can to get better, and it's a slow process, you know, I would say mine, even being like a year and a half of active treatment, was actually particularly fast. You know, I know people that have done over a decade of stuff. So I kind of feel like, oh man, I got lucky. I'm such a brat. But I remember that, you know, I just remember how slow life felt and how hard it was. And I tried to find things that I could do or pick up a new hobby, something that you could do, not being able to move and get up. You know, before I was such a tomboy, like I loved running around and being active. Well, that is now off the plate because 20 minutes of exercise means a 3-hour nap. So unless I wanted a 3-hour nap, that's not happening. So I needed to find new things to fulfill me. You know, spending time with my kids when I had decent energy, you know, finding, you know, if I had energy to make extra meals, I tried to find somebody in my neighborhood that needed a dinner that night. I had a mom that was a friend that was a single mom that she also had a lot on her plate. So although there's a lot of things that you are now unable to do, I think something that kept me going and something that gave me hope was finding some way to give back and contribute, even if it was just, I wrote 3 sentences in a little note and had my husband drop it in someone's mailbox. And even though my handwriting looked terrible because my fingers were numb, it was something I could do. And I tried to find ways to celebrate those little things and be content along the journey. So it, I think if you can discover, it's a new level of discovery. When you are sick and you lose everything, you need to find some new things, you know, just something.
I love that. I absolutely love that because when you're sick and you lose all hope, why keep fighting? But if you can do what you just said and find something that will give you that hope to keep fighting, those are fantastic advice. Fantastic. I love, love, love that.
Yeah, I think that's incredible. And that kind of takes you away from you becoming the center, you know, so that you feel you kind of expand your energy instead of it just contracting into you. So you're continually trying to expand and reach out to whatever it is that I can do. And now you're exploring that and kind of opening that door and try to widen that door in order to be able to expand your abilities to do things.
Yeah. And you know that when everything feels like it's converging in on you and it's a dark, lonely, yucky place to be. And you need to find where the light bulb is. You got to figure out where to turn it on. What can I do? I mean, I think it's hard too, because before I was sick, I always took a lot of pride in all the things I could do, like physically do or contribute and check, you know, check the box off. And, you know, when you deal with chronic illness, that if that's where you measure your worth, then like, wow, your self-esteem is going to take a bigger hit than your body is already taking. And so, you know, just trying to redefine, you know, what the contribution looks like. And sometimes just having existed and doing the best that you could that day, even though it was all in bed, you just say, well, that's what I had to give today. And that's enough. And you're content with that. And that may be weeks of your journey. That may be some really hard days, but I think you just, reevaluate worth and what's worthwhile. Your priorities shift very quickly. You realize that, you know, people matter, how you make people feel matter, how you try to love others, you know, and that includes loving yourself with where you're at. Because having cared for my kids that I've had to deal with this illness, my daughter is in a really intense relapse right now. And she's struggling just a lot emotionally some days. And I would never judge her for where she's at. I would never say, well, you could have played your flute today and you could have done this. And, you know, why would I say that to myself when I'm sick? You know, when you care for somebody else, you also quickly learn you have to give a lot of grace, and we deserve that as well. You know, you have to be okay sometimes with where the limit was for the day. And there's, you know, just find a way to be okay with it. It takes practice, I think.
I think grace is a powerful word, and kind of recognize the amount of grace you need for yourself in this journey. And like you're saying, for your daughter, but and a lot of people, they have the ability to give grace to other people, but it's the hardest thing to do it for yourself. So, and then when you do that little thing and really be full of gratitude that I was able to do this today.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Focus on the can. Love that. Yep.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your journey, for sharing your ups and downs, sharing the wisdom through what you gained, what you learned from this journey. Because there's so many people that are listening, and they are loving to learn, and these kind of things give them hope. In fact, I hear comments from spouses that are now able to understand their wife or husband that's dealing with Lyme, and hearing other people's stories and recognizing what their spouse is going through. I really thank you so much.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I was so nervous, but after listening to some of the previous podcasts, that you guys have done, I have loved hearing everybody's journey, and I've especially loved hearing the variety of ways that people have found healing. And I'm like, oh, there are so many ways. Like, we have so many options. We have so many options that we don't need to be afraid. We just need to keep moving.
We really do. And no option is necessarily the right option. So it's a great way. And it gives, like Dr. Karlfeldt said, your journey is giving hope to so, so many people. And those extra words of find what you can do today to those that might be laying in bed right now and feeling so defeated and not wanting to go on any further in their battling. They just feel like giving up, and it's people like you that share their journey that will make them go on and continue their fight to become a conqueror. So thank you so much, Candy.
Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Candy,
for having me. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
The information in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or treat any disease. I hope this podcast impacted you as it did me. Please subscribe so that you can be notified when new episodes are released. There are some excellent shows coming up that you do not want to miss. If you're enjoying these podcasts, please take a moment to write a review, and please don't keep this information to yourself. Share them with your family and friends. You never know what piece of information that will transform their lives. For past episodes and powerful information on how to conquer Lyme, go to integrativelymesolutions.com, and an additional powerful resource, limestream.com. For Lyme support and group discussions, join Tanya on Facebook at Lyme Conquerors Mentoring Lyme Warriors. If you'd like to know more about the cutting-edge integrative Lyme therapies my center offers, please visit thekarlfeldtcenter.com. Thank you for spending this time with us, and I hope to see you at our next episode of Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Karlfeldt.